Chapter 8. Guard and Bobby. 1. Gardner knew that Bobby would make her move soon. The old Bobby had fulfilled what the new and improved Bobby saw as its last obligation to good old Jim Gardner, who had come to save his friend, and who had stayed on to whitewash one hell of a strange fence. He thought, in fact, that it would be the sling, that Bobby would want to go up first, and once up, would simply not send it back down. There he'd be, down by the hatch, and there he'd die, next to that strange symbol. Bobby wouldn't even have to deal with the messy reality of murder. There would be no need to think about good old Guard dying slowly and miserably of starvation, either. Good old Guard would die of multiple hemorrhages very quickly. But Bobby insisted that Guard go up first, and the sardonic cut of her eyes told Gardner that Bobby knew exactly what he had been thinking, and she hadn't had to read his mind to do it, either. The sling rose in the air, and Gardner clung tightly to the cable, fighting a need to vomit. That need, he thought, was quickly going to become impossible to deny, but Bobby had sent him a thought which came through loud and clear as soon as they wriggled out through the hatch again. Don't take the mask off until you get topside. Were Bobby's thoughts clearer? Or was it his imagination? No, not imagination. They had both gotten another boost inside the ship. His nose was still bleeding, and his shirt was sopping with it. The air mask was filling up. It was by far the worst nosebleed he'd had since Bobby first brought him out here. Why not? He had sent back, trying to be very careful and send only that top thought, nothing below it. Most of the machines we heard were air exchangers. Breathing what's in the trench now would do you in just as quick as breathing what was in the ship when we first opened it. The two won't equalize for the rest of the day, maybe longer. Not the sort of thinking one would usually suspect in a woman who wanted to kill you, but that look was still in Bobby's eyes, and the feel of it colored all of Bobby's thoughts. Hanging onto the cable for dear life, biting at the rubber pegs, Gardner fought to hold onto his stomach. The sling reached the top. He wandered away on legs that felt as if they were made of rubber bands and paper clips, barely seeing the Electrolux and the length of cable manipulating the buttons. Count 10, he thought. Count 10, get as far from the trench as you can, then take off the mask and take what comes. I think I'd rather die than feel like this anyway. He got as far as 5 and could hold back no longer. Crazy images danced before his eyes, dumping the drink down Patricia McCardle's dress, seeing Bobby reeling off her porch to greet him when he finally arrived. The big man with the gold cup over his mouth and nose, turning to look at him from the passenger window of a 4-wheel drive as Gardner lay drunk on the porch. If I'd dug in a few different places out at that gravel pit, why, I just might have found that one too, he thought. And that was when his stomach finally rebelled. He tore the mouthpiece off and threw up, groping for a pine tree at the edge of the clearing and clinging to it for support. He did it again, and realized he had never experienced this sort of vomiting in his entire life. He had read about it, however. He was ejecting stuff, most of it bloody, in wads that flew like bullets. And bullets were almost what they were. He was having a seizure of projectile vomiting. This was not considered a sign of good health in medical circles. Gray veils drifted over his sight. His knees buckled. Oh, fuck. I'm dying, he thought. But the idea seemed to have no emotional gradient. It was dreary news, no more, no less. He felt his hands slipping down the rough bark of the pine. He felt tarry sap. Faintly, he was aware that the air smelled foul and yellow and sulfuric. It was the way a paper mill smells after a week of still, overcast weather. He didn't care. Whether there were Elysian fields or just a big black nothing, there would not be that stink. So maybe he would come out a winner anyway. Best to just let go. To just... No. No, you will not just let go. You came back to save Bobby. And Bobby was maybe already beyond saving, but that kid's around and he might not be. Please, Guard, at least try. Don't let it be for nothing, he said in a cracked, wavering voice. Jesus Christ, please, don't let it be for nothing. The wavering gray mists cleared a little. The vomiting subsided. He raised a hand to his face and flung away a sheet of blood with it. A hand touched the back of his neck as he did, and Gardner's flesh pebbled with goosebumps. A hand, Bobby's hand, but not a human hand. Not anymore. Guard, are you all right? All right, he answered aloud and managed to get to his feet. The world wavered, then came back into focus. The first thing he saw in it was Bobby. The look on Bobby's face was one of cold, cheerless calculation. He saw no love there, not even a counterfeit of concern. Bobby had become beyond such things. Let's go, Gardner said hoarsely. You drive, I'm feeling... He stumbled and had to grab at Bobby's bunched, strained shoulder to keep from falling. A little under the weather. 2. By the time they got back to the farm, Gardner was better. The bleeding from his nose had subsided to a trickle. He had swallowed a fair amount of blood while wearing the mouthpiece, and a lot of the blood he had seen in his vomit must have been that, he hoped. He had lost a total of 9 teeth. I want to change my shirt, he told Bobby. Bobby nodded without much interest. Come on out in the kitchen after you do, she said. We have to talk. Yes, I suppose we do. In the guest room, Gardner took off the T-shirt he had been wearing and put on a clean one. He let it hang down over his belt. He went to the foot of the bed, lifted the mattress, and got the .45. He tucked it into his pants. The T-shirt was too big. He had lost a lot of weight. The outline of the gun butt hardly showed at all if he sucked in his gut. He paused for a moment longer, wondering if he was ready for this. He supposed there was no way to tell such a thing in advance. A dull headache gnawed his temples, and the world seemed to move in and out of focus in slow, woozy cycles. His mouth hurt, and his nose felt stuffed with drying blood. This was it. As much a showdown as any Bobby had ever written in her westerns. High noon in central Maine. Make your play, pard. A ghost of a smile touched his lips. All of those two-for-a-penny sophomore philosophers said life was a strange proposition, but really, this was outrageous. He went out to the kitchen. Bobby was sitting at the kitchen table watching him. Strange, half-glimpsed green fluid circulated below the surface of her transparent face. Her eyes, larger, the pupils oddly misshapen, looked at Gardner somberly. On the table was a boombox radio. Dick Allison had brought it out to Bobby's 3 days ago, at her request. It was the one Hank Buck had used to send Pitts Barfield to that great repel-depel in the sky. It had taken Bobby less than 20 minutes to connect its circuitry to the toy photon pistol she was pointing at Gardner. On the table were 2 beers and a bottle of pills. Gardner recognized the bottle. Bobby must have gone into the bathroom and gotten it while he was changing his shirt. It was his Valium. Sit down, guard, Bobby said. 3. Gardner had raised his mental shield as soon as he was out of the ship. The question now was how much of it still remained. He walked slowly across the room and sat at the table. He felt the .45 digging into his stomach and groin. He also felt it digging into his mind, lying heavy against whatever was left of that shield. Are those for me? He asked, pointing at the pills. I thought we'd have a beer or two together, Bobby said evenly. The way friends do? And you could take a few of those at a time while we talk. I thought it would be the kindest way. Kind, Gardner mused. He felt the first faint tug of anger. Won't get fooled again, the song said. But the habit must be awfully hard to break. He himself had been fooled plenty. But then, he thought, maybe you're an exception to the rule, guard, old guard. I get the pills, and Peter got that weird sequarium in the shed. Bobby, your definition of kindness has undergone one fuck of a radical change since the days when you'd cry if Peter brought home a dead bird. Remember those days? We lived here together. We stood your sister off when she came. and never had to stick her in a shower stall to do it. We just kicked her ass the hell out. He looked at her somberly. Remember, Bobby? That was when we were lovers as well as friends. I thought you might have forgotten. I would have died for you, kiddo. And I would have died without you. Remember? Remember us? Bobby looked down at her hands. Did he see tears in those strange eyes? Probably all he saw was wishful thinking. When were you in the shed? Last night. What did you touch? I used to touch you, Gardner mused, and you me. And neither of us minded, remember? What did you touch? She screamed shrilly at him. And when she looked back up, he didn't see Bobby, but only a furious monster. Nothing, Gardner said. I touched nothing. The contempt on his face must have been more convincing than any protest would have been, because Bobby settled back. She sipped delicately at her beer. Doesn't matter. You couldn't have done anything out there anyway. How could you do it to Peter? That's how it keeps coming at me. The old man I didn't know, and Anne barged in. But I knew Peter. He would have died for you, too. How could you do it? God's name. He kept me alive when you weren't here, Bobby said. There was just the faintest uneasy defensive note in her voice. When I was working around the clock. He was the only reason there was anything left for you to save when you got here. You fucking vampire. She looked at him, then away. Jesus Christ, you did something like that, and I went along with it. Do you know how that hurts? I went along. I saw what was happening to you. To a lesser degree, I saw what was happening to the others, but I still went along with it. Because I was crazy. But of course you knew that, didn't you? You used me the same way you used Peter. But I wasn't even as smart as an old beagle dog, I guess. Because you didn't even have to put me in the shed and stick one of those filthy, stinking, rotten cables in my head to do it. You just kept me oiled. You handed me a shovel and said, "Here you go, guard. Let's dig this baby up and stop the Dallas police." Except you're the Dallas police, and I went along with it. Drink your beer, Bobby said. Her face was cold again. And if I don't? Then I'm going to turn on this radio, Bobby said, and open a hole in reality, and send you somewhere. To Altair 4? Gardner asked. He kept his voice casual and tightened his mental grip, shield, 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 on that barrier in his mind. A slight frown creased Bobby's forehead again, and Gardner felt those mental fingers probing again, digging, trying to find out what he knew, how much, and how. Distract her. Make her mad and distract her. How? You've been snooping a lot, haven't you? Bobby asked. Not until I realized how much you were lying to me. And suddenly knew. He had gotten it in the shed without even knowing it. Most of the lies you told to yourself, guard. Oh? What about the kid that died? Or the one that's blind? How do you know the shed? That's where you go to get smart, isn't it? She said nothing. You sent them to get batteries. You killed one and blinded the other to get batteries. Jesus, Bobby, how stupid could you get? We're more intelligent than you could ever hope to. Who's talking about intelligence? He cried furiously. I'm talking about smarts. Common fucking sense. The CMP power lines run right behind your house. Why didn't you tap them? Sure, Bobby smiled with her weird mouth. A really intelligent, pardon me, smart idea. And the first time some tech at the Augusta substation saw the power drain on his dials, you're running almost everything on C, D, and AA batteries, Gard said. That's a trickle. A guy using house current to run a big bandsaw would bang those needles harder. She looked momentarily confused, seemed to listen, not to anyone else, but to her own interior voice. Batteries run on direct current, guard. AC power lines wouldn't do us any good. He struck his temples with his fists and screamed, "Haven't you ever seen a goddamn DC converter?" You can get them at Radio Shack for $3. Are you seriously trying to tell me you couldn't have made a simple DC converter when you can make your tractor fly and your typewriter run on telepathy? Are you? Nobody thought of it, she screamed suddenly. There was a moment of silence. She looked stunned, as if at the sound of her own voice. Nobody thought of it, he said. Right. So you've sent those two kids, all ready to do or die for good old Haven. And now one of them is dead, and the other one's blind. It's shit, Bobby. I don't care who or what has taken you over. Part of you has to be inside someplace. Part of you has to realize that you people haven't been doing anything creative at all. Quite the opposite. You've been taking dumb pills and congratulating each other on how wonderful it all is. I was the crazy one. I kept telling myself it would be okay even after I knew better. But it's the same old shit it always was. You can disintegrate people. You can teleport them to someplace for safekeeping or burial or whatever. But you're as dumb as a baby with a loaded pistol. I think you'd better shut up now, guard. You didn't think of it, he said softly. Jesus, Bobby. How can you even look at yourself in the mirror? Any of you. I said, I think, idiot savant, you said once. It's worse. It's like watching a bunch of kids getting ready to blow up the world with soapbox derby plans. You guys aren't even evil. Dumb, but not evil. Guard, you're just a bunch of dumbbells with screwdrivers. He laughed. Shut up! She shrieked. Jesus, Guard said. Did I really think Sissy was dead? Did I? She was trembling. He nodded toward the photon gun. So if I don't drink the beer and take the pills, you pack me off to Altair 4, right? I get to babysit David Brown until we both drop dead of asphyxiation or starvation or cosmic ray poisoning. She was viciously cold now, and it hurt, more than he ever would have believed. But at least she wasn't trying to read him. In her anger, she had forgotten. The way they had forgotten how simple it was to plug a battery-driven tape recorder into a wall socket with a DC converter between the instrument and the power source. There really isn't an Altair 4, just as there aren't really any Tommyknockers. There aren't any nouns for some things, they just are. Somebody pastes one name on those things in one place, somebody pastes on another someplace else. It's never a very good name, but it doesn't matter. You came back from New Hampshire talking and thinking about Tommyknockers, so here, that's what we are. We've been called other things in other places. Altair 4 has, too. It's just a place where things get stored. Usually not live things. Attics can be cold, dark places. Is that where you're from? Your people? Bobby, or whatever this was that looked a bit like her, laughed almost gently. We're not a people, Guard. Not a race. Not a species. Klaatu is not going to appear and say, take us to your leader. No, we're not from Altair 4. She looked at him, still smiling faintly. She had recovered most of her equanimity and seemed to have forgotten the pills for the time being. If you know about Altair 4, I wonder if you found the existence of the ship a little strange. Gardner only looked at her. I don't suppose you've had time enough to wonder why a race with access to teleportation technology, Bobby wiggled the plastic gun slightly, would even bother zipping around in a physical ship. Guard raised his eyebrows. No, he hadn't considered that. But now that Bobby brought it up, he remembered a college acquaintance once wondering aloud why Kirk, Spock, and company bothered with the Starship Enterprise when it would have been so much simpler to just beam around the universe. More dumb pills, he said. Not at all. It's like radio. There are wavelengths. But beyond that, we don't understand it very well. Which is true of us about most things, Guard. We're builders, not understanders. Anyway, we've isolated something like 90,000 clear wavelengths. That is, prolinear settings which do two things. Avoid the binomial paradox that prevents the reintegration of living tissue and unfixed matter, and actually seem to go somewhere. But in almost all cases, it isn't anywhere anyone would want to go. Like winning an all-expenses-paid trip to Utica, huh? Much worse. There's a place which seems to be very much like the surface of Jupiter. If you open a door on that place, the difference in pressure is so extreme it starts a tornado in the doorway, which quickly assumes an extremely high electrical charge, which blows the door open wider and wider, like tearing a wound open. The gravity is so much higher that it starts sucking out the earth of the incursive world the way a corkscrew pulls a cork. If left on that particular station for long, it would cause a gravonic fault in the planet's orbit, assuming the mass was similar to Earth's. Or, depending on the planet's composition, it might just rip it to pieces. Did anything like that come close to happening here? Guard's lips were numb. Such a possibility made Chernobyl seem as important as a fart in a phone booth. And you went along with it, Guard, his mind screamed at him. You helped dig it up. No, although some people had to be dissuaded from doing too much tinkering along transmitter-transmatter lines. She smiled. It happened somewhere else we visited, though. What happened? They got the door shut before Shatter Day, but a lot of people cooked when the orbit changed. She sounded bored with the subject. All of them? Gardner whispered. Nope. There are still 9 or 10,000 of them alive at one of the poles, Bobby said. I think. Jesus. Oh, my Jesus. Bobby. There are other channels which open on rock. Just rock. The inside of some place. Most open in deep space. We've never been able to chart a single one of those locations using our star charts. Think of it, Guard. Every place has been a strange place to us. Even to us. And we are great sky travelers. She leaned forward and sipped a little more beer. The toy pistol, which was no longer a toy, did not waver from Gardner's chest. So that's teleportation. Some big deal, huh? A few rocks, a lot of holes, one cosmic attic. Maybe someday someone will open a wavelength into the heart of a sun and flash-fry a whole planet. Bobby laughed, as if this would be a particularly fine jest. The gun didn't waver from Guard's chest, however. Growing serious again, Bobby said, But that's not all, Guard. When you turn on a radio, you think of tuning a station. But a band, megahertz, kilohertz, shortwave, whatever, isn't just stations. It's also all the blank space between stations. In fact, that's what some bands are mostly made up of. Do you follow? Yes. This is my roundabout way of trying to convince you to take the pills. I won't send you to the place you call Altair IV, Guard. There I know you die slowly and unpleasantly. The way David Brown is dying? I had nothing to do with that, she said quickly. It was his brother's doing entirely. It's like Nuremberg, isn't it? Nothing was really anyone's fault. You idiot, Bobby said. Don't you realize that sometimes that's the truth? Are you so gutless you can't accept the idea of random occurrence? I can accept it. But I also believe in the ability of the individual to reverse irrational behavior, he said. Really? You never could. Shot your wife, he heard the booger-picking deputy say. Good fucking deal, huh? Maybe sometimes people start the old atonement boogie a little late, he thought, looking down at his hands. Bobby's eyes flicked sharply at his face. She had caught some of that. He tried to reinforce the shield, a tangled chain of disconnected thoughts like white noise. What are you thinking about, Guard? Nothing I want you to know, he said, and smiled thinly. Think of it as, well, let's say, a padlock on a shed door. Her lips drew back from her teeth for a moment, then relaxed into that strange, gentle smile again. It doesn't matter, she said. I might not understand anyway. As I say, we've never been very good understanders. We are not a race of super-Einsteins. Thomas Edison in space would be closer, I think. Never mind. I won't send you to a place where you'll die a slow, miserable death. I still love you in my way, Guard. And if I have to send you somewhere, I'll send you to... nowhere. She shrugged. It's probably like taking ether. But it might be painful. Agony, even. Either way, the devil you know is always better than the devil you don't. Gardner suddenly burst into tears. Bobby, you could have saved me yay grief if you'd reminded me of that sooner. Take the pills, Guard. Deal with the devil you know. The way you are now, 200 milligrams of Valium will take you off very quickly. Don't make me mail you like a letter addressed to nowhere. Tell me some more about the Tommyknockers, Gardner said, wiping at his face with his hands. Bobby smiled. The pills, Guard. If you start taking the pills, I'll tell you anything you want to know. If you don't... She raised the photon pistol. Gardner unscrewed the top of the Valium bottle, shook out half a dozen of the blue pills with the heart shape in the middle. Valentines from the Valley of Torpor, he thought. Tossed them into his mouth, cracked the beer, and swallowed them. There went 60 milligrams down the old chute. He could have hidden one under his tongue, maybe, but six... Come on, folks, be real. Not much time now. I vomited my belly empty. I've lost a lot of blood. I haven't been taking this shit, and so have no tolerance to it. I'm some 30 pounds lighter than I was when I picked up the first mandatory prescription. If I don't get rid of this shit quick, they'll hit me like a highballing semi. Tell me about the Tommyknockers, he invited again. One hand dropped into his lap, below the table, and touched the butt. Shield, shield, shield. Of the gun. How long before the stuff started to work? 20 minutes? He couldn't remember, and nobody had ever told him about ODing on Valium. Bobby moved the gun a bit toward the pills. Take some more, Guard. As Jacqueline Suzanne may have once said, six is not enough. He shook out four more, but left them on the oilcloth. You were scared shitless out there, weren't you? Gardner asked. I saw the way you looked, Bobby. You looked like you thought they were all going to get up and walk. Day of the Dead. Bobby's new and improved eyes flickered, but her voice remained soft. But we are walking and talking, Guard. We are back. Guard picked up the four Valiums, bounced them in his palm. I want you to tell me just one thing, and then I'll take these. Yes, just that one thing would in some fashion answer all the other questions, the ones he was never going to get a chance to ask. Maybe that was why he hadn't tried Bobby with the gun yet. Because this was what he really needed to know, this one thing. I want to know what you are, Gardner said. Tell me what you are. 4. I'll answer your question. Or at least try to, Bobby said. If you'll take those pills you're bouncing in your hand right now. Otherwise, you're going bye-bye, Guard. There's something in your mind. I can't quite read it. It's like seeing a shape through gauze, but it makes me extremely nervous. Gardner put the pills in his mouth and swallowed them. More. Gardner shook out another four and took them, all the way up to 140 milligrams now. Shooting the moon, Bobby seemed to relax. I said Thomas Edison was closer than Albert Einstein. And that's as good a way to put it as any, Bobby said. There are things here in Haven that would have made Albert boggle, I suppose, but Einstein knew what E equals MC squared meant. He understood relativity. He knew things. We make things, fix things. We don't theorize, we build. We're handymen. You improve things, Gardner said. He swallowed. When Valium took hold of him, his throat began to feel dry. He remembered that much. When it started to happen, he would have to act. He thought maybe he had already taken a lethal dose, and there were at least a dozen pills left in the bottle. Bobby had brightened a little. Improve! That's right. That's what we do. The way we improved Haven. You saw the potential as soon as you got back. No more having to suck the corporate tit. Eventually, it's possible to convert totally to organic storage battery sources. They're renewable and long-lasting. You're talking about people. Not just people. Although higher species do seem to produce longer-lasting power than the lower ones, it may be a function of spirituality rather than intelligence. The Latin word for it, esse, is probably the best. But even Peter has lasted a remarkably long time, produced a great deal of power, and he's only a dog. Maybe because of his spirit, Gardner said. Maybe because he loved you. He took the pistol out of his belt. He held it, shield, against his inner left thigh. That's beside the point, Bobby said, waving the subject of Peter's love or spirituality away. You have decided, for some reason, that the morality of what we're doing is unacceptable. But then, the spectrum of what you think of as morally acceptable behavior is very narrow. It doesn't matter. You'll be going to sleep soon. We have no history, written or oral. When you say the ship crashed here because those in charge were, in effect, fighting over the steering wheel, I feel there's an element of truth in that. But I also feel that perhaps it was meant, fated, to happen. Telepaths are, at least to some degree, precognitives, guard, and precognitives are more apt to let themselves be guided by the currents, both large and small, that run through the universe. God is the name some people give those currents, but God's only a word, like Tommyknockers or Altair 4. What I mean is, we would almost certainly be long extinct if we hadn't trusted those currents, because we've always been short-tempered, ready to fight. But fight is too general a word. We... Bobby's eyes suddenly glowed a deep, frightful green. Her lips spread in a toothless grin. Gardner's right hand clutched the gun with a sweaty palm. We squabble, Bobby said. Le mot juste, Gard. Good for you, Gardner said, and swallowed. He heard a click. That dryness hadn't just sneaked up. All at once it was just there. Yes, we squabble. We've always squabbled. Like kids, you could say, Bobby smiled. We're very childlike. That's our good side. Is it now? A monstrous image suddenly filled Gardner's head. Grammar school kids heading off to school armed with books and Uzis and Smurf lunchboxes and M16s, and apples for the teachers they liked, and fragmentation grenades for those they didn't. And, oh, Christ, every one of the girls looked like Patricia McCardle, and every one of the boys looked like Ted the Power Man. Ted the Power Man, with greeny glowing eyes that explained the whole sorry fucking mess from Crusades and Crossbow to Reagan's missile-tipped satellites. We squabble. Every now and then we even tussle a bit. We're grown-ups, I guess. But we still have bad tempers, like kids do, and we also still like to have fun, like kids do, so we satisfied both wants by building all these nifty nuclear slingshots. And every now and then we leave a few around for people to pick up, and do you know what? They always do. People like Ted, who are perfectly willing to kill, so no woman in Braintree with the wherewithal to buy one shall want for electricity to run her hairdryer. People like you, Guard, who see only minimal drawbacks to the idea of killing for peace. It would be such a dull world without guns and squabbles, wouldn't it? Gardner realized he was getting sleepy. Childlike, she repeated. We fight, but we can also be very generous, as we have here. Yes, you've been very generous to Haven, Gardner said, and his jaws abruptly cracked open in a huge, tendon-stretching yawn. Bobby smiled. Anyway, we might have crashed because it was crash time, according to those currents I mentioned. The ship wasn't hurt, of course, and when I started to uncover it, we came back. Are there more of you out there? Bobby shrugged. I don't know. And don't care, the shrug said. We are here. There are improvements to be made. That is enough. That's really all you are? He wanted to make sure there was no more to it. He was terribly afraid he was taking too long, much too long, but he had to know. That's all?
What do you mean, all?
Is it so little what we are? Frankly, yes, Guard said. You see, I've been looking for the devil outside my life all my life because the one inside was so fucking hard to catch. It's hard to spend such a long time thinking you're Homer. He yawned again, hugely. His eyelids had bricks on them. And discover you were Captain Ahab all the time. And finally, for the last time, with a kind of desperation, he asked her, Is that all you are? Just people who fix things up?
I guess so, she said. I'm sorry it's such a letdown for you.
Gardner lifted the pistol under the table, and at the same moment felt the drug finally betray him. The shield slipped. Bobby's eyes glowed. No, this time they glared. Her voice, a mental scream, blasted through Gardner's head like a meat cleaver. Gun! He's got a gun! He's got a— chopping through the rising fog. She tried to move. At the same time, she tried to bring the photon pistol to bear on him. Gardner aimed the .45 at Bobby under the table and pulled the trigger. There was only a dry click. The old slug had misfired.